KHOI, Story City Ames and surrounding community.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with Pat Schlerbaum, Sam Wormley, and station manager Mike Murphy, who's engineering this broadcast this morning.
Our day starts with mostly sunny skies and temperatures reaching a high of 81 degrees. Winds will be from the north-northwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. This evening, we will have clear skies with light and variable winds. Overnight temperatures will drop into the low to mid-50s. The current temperature is 58 degrees.
Pat, birds are starting to quiet down a little bit this time of year, and they're flocking up somewhat. I thought it would be interesting to just go around, talk to folks here at KHOI, and also folks that I bumped into on the street about their favorite birds.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
I'm here with Sue Lekwa. Sue, getting into late summer, we have a lot of birds in Iowa, but is there a favorite bird of yours for this time of year?
Oh gosh, let's see. My favorite bird is the bluebird, but we're probably seeing less and less of them. Okay. But that's my favorite.
And what is it about the bluebird that's your favorite?
It makes me think of a bluebird day. It's going to be just fine.
Mike Murphy, tell me, what's one of your favorite birds this time of year?
Well, I always delight in seeing cardinals, although you don't see them as much now. What I see more than anything, and probably the first bird I was ever able to identify, was a robin. And I see plenty of them, and that's always good.
So robins are probably that bird drew you to look at birds and know they weren't just birds.
Right.
Is there an experience you've had with one of those two birds that kind of instilled that fondness for them?
Well, I mean, with both of them, I think it has to do with the color, like the robin red breast and, of course, the cardinal. Another bird I liked seeing as a youngster was the blue jay, but my mother always told me those blue jays are so nasty. So,
should he give you a reason why they were so nasty?
Well, they're always squawking at you.
Deb Merriman, do you have a favorite bird?
I do have a favorite bird. It's the hummingbird. I have a hummingbird outside. I see a lot of the cardinals. They're beautiful.
What is it about the hummingbird that attracts you to them?
The way they fly in the air with their wings. They're like amazing.
Probably the only bird that can fly backwards.
I think so.
Pat, your favorite bird for this time of season?
Usually the bird that I'm looking at, the barn swallows. I've got two additional nests. I think they're re-nests this year. Had 22 young earlier, and now I'm going to be able to add five or six more, it looks like. So I like the barn swallows this time of year. I also like my blue jays, but that's because I used to smoke cigarettes and hang around pool halls. If blue jays were people, I'm sure that's where they would hang out. And that must be what Mike's mom was referring to. If they were people, they would be the undesirable crowd. They are hard on other birds. They're okay. They got that loodle-loodle sort of yodel call that every time I hear it, I'll stop what I'm doing, dude, and appreciate that yodeling call. But let me tell you one more story. Back when we were growing up, I think it was called Picture Magazine, in the Sunday Register at that time, they would have a center spread of the birds of Iowa. And I remember, I think it was like in first grade, we all went to school and we're with our favorite bird in mind. And that year, I think a lot of people did like the cardinals, but for some reason, I really, really liked the tufted titmouse. He had that nice little crest and that little gray with the apricot color.
It's kind of like a chickadee with a little toque.
Yeah, a little toque. There you go.
Jim, do you have a bird that you like?
A finch.
The goldfinch or the house
finch? The house finch.
The house finch. And what is it about the house finch that you admire?
They nest underneath my deck, and so I can watch them come and go.
Do you charge them rent?
No.
Do you provide food for them?
No.
Okay, you just take advantage of watching them, and you don't give them anything back.
That's correct.
Okay. Eric,
I know you're into flying mammals. Do you have a favorite bird?
Actually, a blue jay, because they're nasty, foul birds.
Okay, now remember, this is going to be on the radio. Oh. So. Okay, but that's fine. A blue jay.
A blue jay.
Because?
They're pretty.
They've got an attitude.
They got an attitude.
Have you ever seen a blue jay that's a little down in its dumps? In other words, it's crestfallen?
Who's the next person that's going to be on?
Sam, do you have a favorite bird?
I do have a favorite bird. I have a love-hate relationship with this bird. It's black, and it crows or caws. I respect the bird for its intelligence, and I just read an article that you can befriend a crow and have a relationship with it. So, yeah, I'm fascinated by crows.
Irv Kloss, what would be a favorite bird of yours?
Oh, boy. Anything that flies through, I guess. I like waterfowl. I recently drove through the Coldwater Golf Course, and there's a snow goose sitting down there, and I couldn't believe it. Today it was out grazing on the grass by itself. I've seen it on the pond as well. That's really strange to have a snow goose at this time of year by itself, because they're gregarious birds. They flock together. You wonder how this bird got separated from its flock. It must have been originally from a big flock. Well, sometimes these geese get injured during the hunting season. And now we've got a spring hunting season. I'm guessing here. I'm thinking that maybe it got an injury during the hunting season last spring and recovered itself, but it never did migrate north.
They go up to the tundra.
Yeah. So it just stayed around. And I think that's what's happened to birds in the past, too.
Okay.
The snow geese.
Carmen Rosberg, what's one of your favorite birds?
I like them all. I'm like Irv. I don't know that I actually have a favorite. But this time of year, the pretty songbirds are kind of moved away from my feeders. I get a lot of pleasure out of just watching, like, the barn swallows swooping around, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm out in the yard, and the red-tailed hawks that are calling early in the morning as they're flying across the fields. So I get a lot of pleasure out of that. I just kind of incidental finds. I usually get to see a few owls this time of year late in the evening, or at least I'll hear them. Morning doves are kind of hanging around. So it's kind of all the common ones.
Paul Reedhead, what is your favorite bird for the summertime?
Eastern bluebird.
Why?
Because they're so beautiful. I could go with an indigo bunting. They're both blue. I love them.
Actually, indigo buntings are not blue. Their feathers light the way it's refracted in the feathers that change the color. That's why sometimes they do look black or really baby blue.
I didn't know that. That was a refractory thing.
Marcia Reedhead, about your favorite summer bird?
I like the red-bellied woodpecker.
Why do you like the red-bellied woodpecker?
Because I don't see him very often, but he does come to my feeder, and it's a thrill when he comes, and he's a big guy.
And he does have a red belly? Is that from somebody rubbing it, or?
It's more like a rose belly.
And it's sort of hard to explain that to people because it has a red head.
Yes.
But that name was already taken.
That's right.
Mary Richards, what is your summertime favorite bird?
Oh, goodness. I think the one who is the most beautiful and the most plentiful and therefore the most ignored is the cardinal. Also an all-year-round bird, shows up in lovely contrast against the snow in the wintertime. They are certainly ever-present right now as well.
They're ground feeders, more or less. Show up early in the morning and late in the evening, just as the sun is setting. There's a term called crepuscular. That's the 25-cent word for the night. Shelley Horngard.
Lots of possible answers. I'm just saying this because I was out walking last night and I looked up and I saw a bald eagle soaring overhead. Anytime I see a bald eagle is a thrill.
Roger Burris.
I like the cardinal birds.
Do you like the cardinal?
Cardinal blue jay.
Because of the colors or because one's sassy?
I just like blue jay. And even the cardinal, but the blue jay really because they're a feisty bird.
Bit like your personality?
Not me.
But then they're not only a summer bird, but they're year-round.
Yes, and they're beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, that blue jay, I think it's just beautiful.
They kind of get a bad rap.
Yes, they do get a bad rap that they're, you know, mean or stuff like that. We watch where robins will chase a blue jay away.
Yeah.
You know, so kind of like me, always getting a bad rap.
Yeah, that's what I was
The thing about blue jays, you know, they'll pick up acorns and things, and they don't forget very often, but the ones they forget, they plant trees.
So why do you like cardinals?
Because they go way up in the top of the tree, and that's where they sing from. And I sit out here a lot of mornings, and the cardinals are over in them bushes over there. And when I walk down the end, I'll whistle at them, and they'll start chattering. Be over in this tree here and that. Once in a while, early in the morning, there'll be one at the feeder, mm-hmm. or late in the evening, just before dark.
Well, they're kind of early risers like you.
No, I don't. And they'd rather feed out of a tray than they would on the feeder, and they'd always be there just before dark.
And they're into the soil, like you were, right?
I don't know.
Am I pulling your feather?
I just kind of fell into farming.
Stephanie, what's your favorite summertime bird?
My favorite bird this time of year is definitely the hummingbird.
Yeah.
And the only one I've ever seen is the ruby-throated hummingbird. I just think they are like little miracles. The fact that they weigh less than a nickel, can fly thousands of miles, because, you know, they, in the summer, they go all the way up to Canada, some of them. But right mm-hmm. here in Iowa, some of them nest. And then to migrate, they fly across the Gulf.
Mm-hmm. Now, do they really do that, or do they hitch a ride on Canada geese?
No, I think they fly. I don't know how they do it, because they're so tiny.
I don't know how they do it either, but they do it without having done it before.
It's amazing.
You said it. They fly by themselves. People think they fly in flocks and that kind of thing, because you see a lot of them together, but they're flying individually.
Pretty much.
On their own agenda.
Yeah.
They
kind of like you as well.
This is going to be a fun Wild Birds recording for next time. So, Louise Ward.
What's your favorite bird, Louise?
Well, she covered my number one favorite bird, humming summer.
So is there another one?
Well, Wren is...
They're feisty, too.
...can withstand a lot.
Yeah. All right, Todd. Okay, Todd, you're not getting away. What's your favorite bird this time of year?
Any bird that comes to the feeder is a favorite bird, Mike.
You know, you're not the only person that's answered that question initially, but there's got to be... You could even give me two.
I like meadowlarks a lot, just because they remind me of childhood on the farm. Hearing them and seeing them on lots of fence posts along the way. And
what part of Iowa did you grow up in?
North Central Iowa, Wright County.
So did you have both meadowlarks, the eastern and western, or did you have more than just the eastern?
I think we probably just had eastern when we were young.
The meadowlarks.
Yeah.
Now you're getting more of the crossover.
That's crossover through here.
Both of them through here.
Well,
so
for a long time we didn't have any.
Right.
Well, right, yeah. Well, and then, you know, what happened before they came, using all the chemicals and everything, they shrunk and they became a dick-sissel for a while. Oh, no, that's a different bird that looks sort of like a meadowlark. Okay.
Side note, I had made, when I started the outdoor page, like year one or two, I went up to Bjork Boda Marsh.
Right.
And was doing a little story on that and was so proud because I got this nice picture of this bird that I captioned as being a immature meadowlark. The next time I was over at Science 2 building, I was walking down the hall to see Jim Pease. And I heard this gravelly voice calling out of the room, "That's not a meadowlark. That was a dick-sissel, Jim Dinsmore." I've never made that mistake again. I did put a correction in.
That's great.
How you learn.
That's how you learn, exactly. I love Jim because of that.
Yeah.
Honestly. The greatest part was when he won the Olof Smedel Award.
Yeah.
And I did a feature on him, and we came out to your place.
Yeah.
And I spent an hour or so, and we talked and took pictures and stuff. And he was just such a wonderful person. I know so much, but really, really humble guy.
Karsten Smedal, would you share what your favorite summertime bird is?
Pheasant chicks.
Pheasant chicks. What is it about pheasant chicks that you probably like the best?
They grow up into big pheasants.
So with that, Stephanie, what do we tell our listeners?
Remember your binoculars. Don't leave home without them.
And where is your store located?
213 Duff, right next door to Dutch Oven Bakery.
So feed yourself to feed the birds. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I like that, Mike.
And if you're just tuning in, it's about 16 minutes after the hour. I'm Mike Metz hosting, and along with me are Pat Schlierbaum and Mike Murphy. And joining us right now is... our co-host for Science Bites. Good morning, Sam. How are you today?
So, what's our topic today, Mike?
Well, our topic is there's fall classes coming up for those folks 50 and older, and it's the OLLI group that we're interested in. What can you tell us about fall OLLI courses, Sam?
Well, first of all, OLLI stands for Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and if people want to know more, they can go online to olli.iastate.edu. I have categorized all of the courses this fall into roughly six groups, and the first that I'd like to talk about are the arts and music courses. There's one called Behind the Beat, another one, Irving Berlin, the Dean of American Songwriters, Through Different Eyes, Nonconformist Art in the Soviet Union. That's not music, but that's about art. And there's one entitled Ukrainian Vision, Artists and Their Cultural Vision. There's a hands-on course for creating images with watercolors, watercolor techniques. And there's another course called World Music, which explores music from all over the world, all different kinds of cultures. Those are the ones that I think fit into the categories of arts and music.
Okay. What's the next category, Sam? It sounds pretty interesting already.
Well, the next category the next category is really in the area of environment and sustainability. We have a number of courses that help people understand what's going on in the environment around them and how they may be able to contribute to making changes. The first class is called Ames Climate Action Plan Update. This is the work that the city is doing and the advisors to the city groups about a plan to help change the way we do things within the city and our community to mitigate the effects of climate. And so this is Ames Climate Action Plan Update. And then there's one called Get a Clue. Get a Clue about Iowa's local food system. Another one, Grassroots for Iowa, Practical Farmers of Iowa, Cover Crops, and Extended Rotations. So this is really a better way, a healthier way to farm in Iowa. And then we have something that might be pretty practical. Heat wave causes and survival. As the climate warms, we're going to experience more and more heat waves, and it's really a good idea to know what their causes are and how to deal with them. Then there's personal transportation without gasoline. Well, what's that all about? I mean, you can think of walking and skateboarding and bicycling and things like that, but it's really about all modes of transportation, particularly electric vehicles, replacing gasoline vehicles, what's available, what the benefits are, and how you can treat the environment better by using electric vehicles. Related to that is solar power, reducing your carbon footprint. And this class actually goes into the nuts and bolts of how can you put solar on your roof or your property or take advantage of solar farms from municipalities or even some of the power companies are providing what we would call solar farms or wind farms that people could buy into. Then there's sustainability and regenerative strategies for farmland. And finally, you've probably heard the phrase, water, water everywhere. And this course is about extracting water from the air, drinkable, potable water, with solar energy or without solar energy, being able to drink in the desert. Those are the kinds of things covered there. So those are the things under the category of environment and sustainability.
Well, Sam, what if I wanted to do self-help or improve my lifestyle? Are there courses for that?
Oh, gosh, yes, there are, Mike. I would think plenty of things that would be lifestyle improvements. For example, 7 steps to living a happy and healthy gluten-free life. Beginner's mind is zen. Getting your ducks in line.
What's getting your ducks in line? Do I just line up a bunch of little quackers or?
Getting your ducks in line is really sort of a later years activity where you get all of your financial and property things organized so that when you pass, all of those people that you pass on to can better understand what you have and how to disseminate it and so on. In other words, it's getting your life in order.
Very good.
Have you checked your personal or have you checked your personality lately? That's a course that dives into what kind of personality do you have. And then there are practical things like, well, most all of these are practical, but holding civil conversations on common good. Boy, don't we need that, Mike.
Some of us do anyway.
How divided are we really? That's another title. Issues for democracy, that's right together. Living a better, lighter, and sustainable life. More yoga for every body. And understanding seasonal affective disorder. Those are the things that help us improve our lives.
How about, what if I'm interested in history or maybe what's going on currently? Are there courses geared toward that?
Boy, the OLLI program has a number of excellent history and current events courses this fall. There's one, the Ames Laboratory, Past, Present, and Future. Anti-Semitism in America, Past and Present. Torame, The Other Half of the Jack Trice Story. Critical Race Theory, A Brief History. Emperors of the Qing Chang, China and Tsars of Imperial Russia in the 18th Century. Emerson Huff. By the way, Mike, I grew up in my hometown. One of the schools was called Emerson Huff. Emerson Huff, journalist, author, and conservationist. 50 Years of Football, from walk-on to the NFL, National Football League. First in Flight, the Tuskegee Airmen. Iowa State, World War I and World War II. In other words, how did those two wars affect the operations and the education that took place at Iowa State College at the time? Should the Supreme Court follow the election returns? Here's a reminiscence. This course is titled The 1960s. And then the Constitutional Convention, where we learn how that happened and maybe why we don't want to have another one. The history and future of the Ames History Museum. This is our story, slavery. Western civilization, its impacts, positive and negative, on the world. And then there's what in the world. Those are in the categories of history and current events, Mike.
Okay, now, of course, the two of us co-host a program on science. Are there some science subjects that are being talked about in the OLLI fall classes this year?
Yes, I'm combining science and technology because they're interrelationship. But the titles of the courses in science and technology are Bitcoins and Can Our Power Grid Survive a Major Solar Outburst? And as you heard earlier, Heat Waves, Cause and Survival. For those that want to know more about their Macintosh computers, Learning Mac Computers. Personal transportation without gasoline, EVs, electric vehicles, as we mentioned. And, Mike, one of my favorite courses is Science in the News. Every week there are news stories about what's happening in the world of science, new discoveries, new applications, and so on. And this is a course designed to let people taking the class discuss those very issues. What's happening in science this week? And as I mentioned before, which were environmentally related, but they're also science, solar power, reducing your carbon footprint, and water everywhere, and we need some to drink.
Now, I know it's not just all classwork, Sam, that there are some trips involved. Does Ollie have trips for the fall courses?
There are trips, Mike. There are a couple of day trips. And when I say day trips, you get on the bus early in the morning and you get back in time to go to bed for sure, maybe even for supper. One is to Forest City, where nature is close, that day trip. Each destination is just full of wondrous things to explore. These are trips where it's all laid out for you, the meals, the tours of the industries and agriculture in the local area, Forest City. The other one is to Jefferson, Iowa, a day trip to Jefferson, Iowa. And there are two visits to Iowa State University Agricultural Site. They're not what we would call day trips. They're more like 3 or 4 hour classes. So, yeah, four different opportunities this fall.
Okay. And anybody over 50 is eligible to take these classes, these courses. I know in the past you've said you don't card folks. So with the technology of Zoom, folks are allowed to participate. And since Zoom, I know we've got more folks than just those in Iowa. Can you just tell our listeners where some of the people are located that have tuned in to these classes?
Well, that's right, Mike. In the spring term, there were people from 43 of the 99 counties taking Ollie classes from Iowa State. And there were people in 21 different states. Because of the pandemic, Ollie programs around the country have expanded geographically to cover a lot more area. So we're serving a lot of people that way.
For folks to find out more information and find out about, there is some cost involved in these. What's the website, Sam?
The website is olli.iastate.edu. That's olli.iastate.edu. And you wind up on a page which allows you to follow up with information, registration, catalogs, and so on. It's kept up to date. In the wintertime, there'll be winter courses. In the spring, there'll be spring courses, and so on.
Okay. Thanks very much, Sam. Any last parting words for our listeners?
Mike, lifelong learning institutes like Ollie at Iowa State are a real asset to the community. They enrich our lives. They keep us learning. They keep our minds active. And we invite everybody. It doesn't have anything to do with Iowa State University. This Ollie programs are for everybody, and we hope you take advantage of them.
Thanks, Sam. And I would concur that I've taken a few of those, and they're well worth it. The really neat thing is you're learning things, then there's no pressure and tests, and you're being taught in some cases by professionals, retired professors, teachers, and folks that just have a passion for their subject. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Mike.
Is making you lonely, you can always go downtown when you've got.
And we're going downtown to say good morning, Susan Guiazda. How are you?
Good. Good morning to you as well. What a beautiful morning it is.
Oh, yes. Kind of the last, second to last day of August, and it's feeling September-ish.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. Open those windows, enjoy this cool air. It looks like it might get a little bit warmer this week, but I hope people get outdoors and enjoy the weather. Just a couple of announcements this morning. Mm-hmm. It was a busy Friday, and it was a busy Monday with just getting out information. Just a reminder, the Ames City Council is seeking feedback on a potential Ames Municipal Airport name change. It would sort of be a name enhancement. In addition to the Ames Municipal Airport moniker, we would have the James Herman Banning Ames Municipal Airport. It's been floated out as an idea. James Herman Banning had some history and connections to Ames. He was the first African-American pilot to get a U.S. commercial aviation license. We have some information on James Banning on our website. If you're interested in leaving a comment about that potential name change, we have a special webpage set up on our website, cityofames.org/airport name. So very easy, just cityofames.org/airport name. You can read a brief paragraph about James Banning, and you can leave your comments on whether you think that would be an appropriate name change. The City Council will take comments until September 15th, and then they will discuss the name change at the September 27th City Council meeting. I'm not sure they'll take action there. They could, but they may just discuss it. It's important to note that they're taking comments really on this potential name. They're not really seeking names. They just want some feedback on this one. Already people have been suggesting alternate names, and that really wasn't the purpose of this exercise. It really is to get feedback on this particular name. So if that's something that interests you, if you have a particular feeling about how the Ames Municipal Airport should be named, please get on our website and give us some comments. We'll be posting things on social media, so you can comment there as well. You can also email people. There's an email name. McKinley Ritter is collecting information. Of course, you can email me, and I will forward that information to our Public Works Department, which oversees the airport.
There's also a little bit of information about him at the Ames History Museum as well. He's been highlighted there.
Yeah, there's a lot of information. That's actually where I got most of my information.
Okay.
Because they had an entire exhibit about James Herman Banning and flying with Banning. It was part of their Smithsonian exhibit a couple of years ago, I believe. So yes, I must give credit to the Ames History Museum for helping me do my research as well. Of course, they're just a huge source of information for all things Ames history in this community.
Okay. You know, we had a little bit of rain here the last couple of days, and that leads to water runoff, quality, use. It looks like maybe you have
Absolutely.
A guest today that might have
some... I do. When we talk about water quality, one of the people I think about is our stormwater analyst, Liz Calhoun, because she has all these great ideas for improving water quality, and I thought it might be good because fall is another time to think about maybe some improvements you can make around your own home that might improve water quality. So I will let Liz take it from here and start talking about some of those options.
Thanks, Susan.
Good morning.
Good morning, Liz. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
We're doing well here. Yeah, we all feel a little bit more refreshed after some of that well-needed rain, that's for sure. Some of my tomatoes actually started to split because all of a sudden they had this extra little shot of rain, and that sort of happens with some of those fruits.
Yep. Well, we definitely needed it, and hopefully some of it got back into our rivers and creeks. They were getting drawn down pretty well. Yeah, it's nice to see the rain and kind of green things up and wash things off a little bit and give people opportunities to refill their rain barrels. And yeah, so I'd just like to maybe talk a little bit about our rebates today.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so we have fall's a good time to do some of our stormwater practices in your own yard. We have native landscaping, which is catching on. People are replacing some of their lawn with some native landscape grasses and flowers, and so that's becoming real popular. We're also have what we call soil quality restoration, where you can do three different things in your lawn to help improve the quality of it, health, and actually help to absorb more water in the ground and produce less runoff. And we have other rebates like our native tree rebate, which is a newer one that's caught on. And then we also have composters and rain barrels that you can be reimbursed for as a rebate. And then we also have rain gardens that you can install. So it's kind of a big, our comprehensive list of our
rain rebates, smart water rebates that we encourage people to install and get a little money back from the city on what they install.
Tell me a little bit about the rain garden concept. How is that beneficial to when we receive rain, especially in the cities with a lot more impervious surfaces? What are the benefits with rain gardens?
Yeah, there's multiple benefits. You basically, you put the rain garden in a place like downhill of your like rain gutters or driveway, and then when the runoff happens, instead of running into the street and directly into the storm sewer, it goes into the rain garden and gives the water a chance to permeate the ground and get back into the ground rather than just running off. So it's getting that recharge into the ground that's really important. And then typically there people put in the native landscaping in the rain garden, so you get the multiple benefits of the pollinator aspect where you're helping to feed our pollinators and have some habitat for them and our birds and insects. Yeah, and then just having a nice-looking garden is a benefit. There's many. I could go on and on. Many benefits to the rain garden.
Yeah, I know another benefit is if you've got some surface runoff that maybe, you had a little extra nitrogen or some other nutrients running into that area, a number of the plants that are used, if I understand it right, will take those nutrients up. So it actually helps with the water quality.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it helps with the nutrients, with sediment, other things that, you know, we really want to try to keep out of our storm sewers and that ultimately would end up in our creeks. So, yeah, the more pre-treatment we can do on our stormwater before it goes into the creeks, just the healthier our creeks are going to be.
Why would sediment be something to be concerned about getting into our surface drainage areas like Skunk River or Iowa Creek? Can you just give our listeners a little bit of reason why we want to keep that sedimentation out and some of those nutrients?
Oh, yeah, well, just the cleaner the water is going into those rivers, the better as far as for the health, the habitat. If we can keep sediment out, you'll see when it rains how much cloudier the water in the creeks become, and that's all suspended sediment that's in there. So for the health of the creeks and the health of the fish and all the different aquatic animals in there, that we can just try to get it cleaned up and just try to keep our streams as clean as far as sediment goes. It's kind of a first baseline thing that you can pull out of the water pretty easily as far as some of the heavier sediment. It's harder on some of the real fine sediment, but the more you can let settle out and get pre-treated out of that stormwater, just the better it's going to be for the creeks.
Keep the soils, the sediments, those kinds of things on the surface of the ground and the cleaner water in the waterways for those aquatics. I know stream quality is measured by the invertebrates, those macroinvertebrates, and the cleaner, healthier the waterway, the more of those you see. And of course, that's part of the food chain for fish and birds and other critters.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, we talked a little bit about French gardens. Is there a program in the city for storm sewers? You know, you see the grates where water runs into it. I know up around Ada Hayden for a while we had some of those marked saying that, hey, the water that's going in here goes to such and such a waterway. Is there more work being done in that area for the city of Ames?
Yeah, that's a great question. We did start a program this year where we had, it's actually put with the Public Arts Council. They had some artists come up with some designs, and then we found some locations in Campustown and downtown where they could paint right above the storm sewer, you know, paint their idea about how to keep the storm sewers as clean as possible. So, yeah, we got some great
entries, and we're actually just finishing that up. I think there's one more artist to finish one on down Main Street in the next week. So we're, I believe there's 9 or 10 of them around town, mm-hmm. and they're great educational pieces that just get people thinking about it as they go, as they walk by them, and just say, hey, you know, let's be more conscious of what goes down that storm drain. Some people don't realize where the water goes. They think it goes to the sanitary treatment plant, and no, it usually does. You know, we don't have combined sewers here, so that means it goes directly to the rivers or some other pre-treatment type storm detention pond. But so it's just a great educational piece, and we're hoping to get more of those around town.
And it's that kind of education that has you take pause and think, well, what you're doing on your driveway or in your yard, for example, is going to end up in the nearest watershed. So you want to be a little more cognizant of what you're doing in your yard and where it's going to end up.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, you had mentioned rebates on rain barrels. Can you just tell our mm-hmm. listeners a little bit about that program?
Yeah, so that's a real easy, simple rebate to acquire. All you have to do is purchase a rain barrel. You can either get them locally at some of our retail stores, the hardware stores typically have them, or you can order one online. It just has to be a minimum of 50 gallons. So you just order that, install it, and then send in an application with your receipt to us here at the Smart Watershed. And we can get you a $50 check in the mail within a week or two.
Okay, that sounds great. And then you also had something on composters. Could you just briefly describe what that's about?
And that's real similar to the rain barrels, just where you collect your food scraps and leaves and grass clippings and put them in a composter, create compost for your garden. And then as well, same type of thing as the rain barrel. We just submit an application and we give you a $50 check in the mail. Real easy. Mm-hmm. And it can be either a self-made composter or you can buy a unit. Some people like to build their own, and we will rebate the material cost if you do build your own. So I'm just trying to encourage people to get their food scraps out of our waste stream and and then reuse the material. It's great rebate.
For your vegetation, your plants, mm-hmm. your garden, your vegetable gardens. Be a great way to save money and have nutritious food and healthy plants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a win-win all around.
There you go. Reuse, recycle, the whole ball of wax. Liz, do you have any... any last words for our listeners in this last minute?
Just encourage people to check out our website, and if you have any questions, you can email me at liz.calhoun@cityofames.org. Our website is cityofames.org/smartwatersheds. Just encourage people to check it out and consider installing one of these practices and doing your part.
Okay. Liz Calhoun, stormwater analyst for the City of Ames. Thank you, Liz.
Okay. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Pure energy. Keep this frequency clear.
Serving the universe from high atop the building with the flaming guitar. Celebrating 10 years of broadcasting excellence. You're listening to KHOI. Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Go.
Whoa! Quiet, we're on the air.
Hello, everybody. We just brought the moon over the mountain.
Hello, Ma. Hello, Pa. It wasn't much of a fight. I stood like that, but not for long.
Quiet. This broadcast is coming to you through the courtesy of Brighto, and it's 6 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, cranberry, strawberry...
And raspberry. Ouch! It
It's still raspberry. Now keep quiet or I'll suck you again.
Are you listening?
Now don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. We'll soon be with you.
Spanning the universe from high atop of beautiful downtown Ames. Wait.
What?
It should be like this. Spanning the cornfields in beautiful downtown Ames. This is the KHOI Jukebox with Eric B.
Hello there, children.
Yes, this is the KHOI Jukebox with me, Eric B. This radio show is heard on your FM dial 89.1 FM and broadcast live and archived at KHOIFM.org.
All right, you know
what? Well, I need help. Let me do this right.
He's the OM and he's the science guy.
Well, you know, I just finished up talking about compost with Liz Calhoun from the city of Ames, and all of a sudden we're talking to Eric Blocker, Eric B., our operations manager for KHOI. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, gentlemen. Where did you steal that from?
Oh, I took bits and pieces from your programs, man, because you wouldn't let me into your vault.
All you had to do was ask.
Well, Eric, we're spending these next couple of minutes reminiscing about 10 years with KHOI. And I was just wondering, you know, you've been with us for a number of years now. How did you find out first about KHOI and how did you get involved?
Actually, how I found out, I was retired due to injury, and I just got bored, and I was looking for something to do, and I saw this one ad for an operations manager, and I just, you know, okay, I had 15 years of radio prior to becoming IT guy for another 10 years, and so I'll make a long story short, I applied for it, and 2 weeks later, I am the operations manager. You know, I've had management experience prior to KHOI and with the radio experience, it's I thought it would be a good fit.
Yeah, you know, you're not from the Midwest, if I can detect something in your voice there, Eric. Where are you from originally?
I am from the Great Garden State of New Jersey.
Okay.
Area code 609.
So you were born in a little one-room log cabin in the pinery out there, huh?
Out in the Pine Barrens, and I was raised on cheesesteaks and tasty cakes.
Tasty
and
cakes.
And lived by the brackish waters of the Little Egg Harbor River in Bay.
There you go. So, Eric, you obviously, that was perhaps somewhat of a cultural move or a shock, or not so much. I know you were out on the West Coast for a while as well.
Mm-hmm. Where I grew up in New Jersey, which is, I was born in Cumberland County. Cumberland County is rather rural in a lot of places. It's known for growing eggplants. I know you know what an eggplant is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
and,
where chickens get their eggs off of plants.
And it's not, California was more of a shock than anything. But here, Iowa, it wasn't too much of a shock.
Okay.
We had cornfields and things like that in southern New Jersey. And,
yeah.
A lot of farmland. It's the state of New Jersey, yeah. To the north, it has the mountains, mm-hmm. the city, and stuff like that. But in between the suburbs and farmland, you know, like I said, it was the Jersey Shore. Right. I mean, you had a little bit of everything in New Jersey, and still does.
Well, isn't that known as the Garden State?
The Great Garden State of New Jersey.
Oh, the Great Garden State. Yeah, I knew as a little kid we thought of it as what we called truck farms out there. In other words, kind of like what you see here, the farmer's market aspect, mm-hmm. where you'd have a lot of smaller acreages, folks would bring their produce in a couple of times a week into the urban areas, and
that's how a lot of folks got their fresh vegetables and fruits.
Now, we have plenty of, how would I put this? We had roadside places where you can go get vegetables and sure. things like that. And big farmer's markets, there's a couple of them. There's one big one, it's called Columbus, and then there's the other one, it's Berlin Farmer's Market, where you can get practically anything.
Mm-hmm.
From seafood that comes from the bay, Delaware Bay, and you can get fresh produce that was grown around the area.
Okay. Well, let's get back to the Midwest and what you're currently doing here with us. You talked about your radio background. How did that help shape what you're doing currently for KHOI?
Oh, boy. Coming to KHOI, a lot of the basic radio principles were basically still intact. But KHOI is, I'm trying not to be so technical. I went from a analog world to a digital world. KHOI is really digital. There are very few cords and cables that that allows his station to be on the air. Jim Popkin, incredible dude. He has virtually connected every bit of the station. I mean, yeah, they're, you know, the microphones that you're talking on, all the cables underneath the table that you're sitting at, yeah, those were necessary. But the connections out to the transmitter and things like that, that's all virtual. And back in the day, it wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. It was a lot different. And a lot of the skills that I learned over, oh, goodness, it's 19 years total in radio. 19 years, that's a lot of time. It helps.
Mm-hmm.
But the base, like I said, the basics are still there when it comes to radio.
Yeah. Eric, how long have you been with KHOI?
It was 3 years as of August 14th.
So you really had just gotten set up there in our old haunts in the Pantorum, and gosh, you weren't with us very long, and then all of a sudden we had the pandemic set in. So what was that like?
The pandemic changed everything for KHOI along with everything else in this world. It was basically an open door over at the Pantorum. But once the pandemic hit, we had to change everything from doing things in person, like we're eventually doing, we're coming back to now, to everything that's being done virtually. We were starting to use Zoom like we're using this morning, and remote broadcasting software, which we all had to learn. You know, there was a big learning curve when it came to that, and I had never done that before. And I have a remote studio that I built here at home,
mm-hmm.
and I take it a lot of you have done this for yourselves, and I just want things to go back to normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is slowly are.
Yeah, it's pretty special when we can come in and there's more than about three of us here to be able to talk things out. It's hard to do that over phone or text or Zoom. I know one of our, I guess it's maybe a running joke, but not really, is that I'm the guy that wakes you up at 2 a.m. because the station isn't on air.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is no joke. That is absolutely true. If something goes wrong, either my phone is like humming or he calls me, and you know, we have a special code. He'll let me know, you know, what is going on, you know, and And, you know, I can run the station from here at home. And that's one of the best things about working remotely. And when something goes wrong, I can immediately fix it.
Yeah, and that's...
If something physically goes wrong at the transmitter.
And that's only when I'm listening. Of course, there's some other folks that do the same thing. But, yeah, Eric is the man behind the curtain, and you have to pay attention to him in this case. That's for sure. So, Eric, yeah. between you and Mike Murphy and Jim, kudos to the three of you guys. It's just... It's a great thing that you guys do for us. A lot of volunteers here it's kind of like the Keystone Cops, but you guys keep us together. So, herding cats. Mm-hmm. You just picked up a cat. It's just like that, right, Eric?
Yeah. I mean, she climbed on my chair and slipped down the back, and she was trying to get out, so I had to let her out.
Eric, just tell our listeners what you're about this afternoon, and we're going to wrap it here.
Okay, today on the KHY Jukebox at 2 o'clock on 89.1 FM KHY, hour number one, Pat Schlarbaum will be with me, and we're going to talk about a music festival that, to me, in my opinion, it's not talked about enough. It's the Monterey Pop Music Festival from 1967. And hour number two, DJ Gildy will come in, and mayhem. And we're going to be talking about Woodstock 99 and the train wreck that it was.
Okay.
And that'll be on the KHY Jukebox at 2 o'clock today.
Thank you, Eric B. We'll be sure to tune in on that. So thanks again for joining us and reminiscing. Thanks to station manager Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk, and a tug of the toque to Lynn Carey for her local production assistance. I've been your host, Mike Metz.
KHY provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHY, your community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Remember that you can also hear the broadcast online at khoyfm.org and find links to our guests and information heard during this program. If you are interested in volunteering for KHY, contact us at khoyfm.org or stop in at 622 Douglas during regular business hours. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOY, and see you again on the radio.
Thank you, Pat.
This is Josh Weber, and this is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. Thanks for listening.